down this wall.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm not a crook.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
For the latest news on money, politics, prophecy, and preparedness. And now your host, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com and the author of more than 30 books, Jim Paris.
All right, hello everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Jim Paris here with you. And just to give people an update so you're not confused, this one is being recorded on Tuesday, April 16th. And we've been recording these on Mondays. This one happens to fall on a Tuesday. So a lot is going on. And I want to start this episode by talking about this attack. Iran attacks Israel. And if you don't know why this is such a big deal, first of all, this is the first time that Iran from its soil launched a direct attack on Israel on its soil. We know, of course, that for many years that Iran has been using proxies. They've been using Hamas. They've been using other terrorist groups throughout the Middle East to, you know, wage what is a proxy war on Israel. And this has been going on. You know, we also have had attacks on our own U.S. troops in Iraq and in other parts of the Middle East through proxies of Iran. But now Iran has stepped it up to do a direct attack on Israel directly from their soil to the soil of Israel. And if you're a student of Bible prophecy, you know that this was predicted in the book of Ezekiel chapter 38. This is the so-called Ezekiel 38 war. I think it could be that it's already started, or it's a precursor to it. But in the very end times, according to Bible prophecy, as predicted in Ezekiel chapter 38, there will be a war against Israel. And that war will be led by Iran. And that is what is happening right now. And we knew this would happen at some point. We didn't know when. We knew that as tensions built between the two countries, that at some point Iran was going to get to this level of making this direct attack. What is so unreal about it is that our president, Joe Biden, is telling Israel to not respond to this attack. And so we knew that Iran was going to attack Israel over the weekend. It was telegraphed apparently a few days ago. And the most interesting part of this is our senator here in Florida, Marco Rubio, came out on Sunday and said he just doesn't understand not only the U.S. position on this, which is telling Israel not to respond to this attack. I mean, how could they not? But that Biden has leaked to the press the fact that he's told them not to respond. So really, you know, putting it out there, laying down a gauntlet, you know, for Israel not to respond to this. And it just makes you ask a lot of questions. And I always thought, as long as the U.S. sided with Israel, that we were going to be in great shape as a country, being blessed by God, being protected by God. And when you just see how far we have drifted as a nation away from God, everything from, you know, all of these, you know, bizarre lifestyles that we're seeing people living. But in addition to that, church attendance is down. People just, it looks like the last days to me. It really does look like the apostasy, the falling away. Even among Christians, it seems like there's a falling away. And now we have the U.S. Yes, we did participate in the defense of Israel over the weekend, but now we're telling Israel not to respond to this attack, which involved hundreds of drones, hundreds of missiles, and we're telling Israel to stand down. It's just a really bad place to be, in my opinion, for the United States to be taking this posture and telling Israel that we will not participate in defending them again if they launch a an attack in response to this Iranian attack, if they, you know, respond back with you know, an attack of their own against Iran, we're not going to be part of their defense in that situation, which is really scary for the U.S. to honestly get to be on the wrong side of this. Now, this story just came out. I think it came out last night or this morning, but this is from CBN News, and you can see this on my Facebook page. A bizarre situation at a Christians Men event in Springfield, Missouri. So Pastor Mark Driscoll was scheduled to preach the main sermon at this men's event in Springfield, Missouri. Now, we know Mark Driscoll has had his own controversies, as highlighted in the Christianity Today podcast, The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill. But it's very interesting. So apparently this whole event was opened up with some kind of guy who was a fire-eating acrobat. At some point in the performance, he takes off his shirt. He even does some acrobatics using a pole. He does a sword eating a demonstration. And so after this, you know, I don't know what you even want to call it, performance, acrobatic performance, something like out of Cirque du Soleil. So Pastor Mark Driscoll is brought to the stage to give his keynote address and makes reference to this performance basically as an abomination, as you know, part of the Jezebel spirit. And so the host of this whole thing, the pastor that was hosting this, his name is Lindell, a pastor of a big church there in Springfield, Missouri, apparently, you know, interrupts Driscoll in his keynote address and tells him to leave the stage. And so this is a big thing. I don't really understand it 100%. I'll be honest with you. I have not gone to a lot of these men's events. I went to one about a year and 3 months ago that was here in Palm Coast, and I really enjoyed it. It's funny, though, how they, I don't know, kind of a caricature of men. So we go to this thing, and it's a steak dinner, which, of course, what man doesn't like a steak dinner? But before the steak dinner, there was axe throwing. There was paintball guns. People were shooting at targets with paintball guns. And a lot of these events, they seem to, I don't know, feel the need that they've got to have like a bunch of manly things that happen. And so, you know, I guess that this strange performer, who I guess became famous on America's Got Talent, this strange performance was part of that, like, we've got a bunch of men together here and we want to do a bunch of alpha male things. So we're going to have this fire eating, sword swallowing guy do his thing. Well, Driscoll's take on it is that this guy was performing as if he were some kind of a male stripper. I don't know. I wasn't there, but it is interesting. And, you know, these men's events, I think they are great, because I think there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed with men as far as being good husbands, good leaders in their home, good fathers, all of those kind of things. And I think these events give a platform for those kinds of presentations to be made, things that we as men need to hear. But I'm not so sure that we need all of these sideshows. I don't know that we need the axe throwing, the paintball guns, the fire-eating acrobats. I don't know that we need that. And I don't, you know, I'm trying to give benefit of the doubt to Pastor Lindell, who hosted this whole thing, that maybe he didn't mean anything by this other than just, hey, this would be some fun entertainment for guys that are all together. I don't know. But that's going on. So that's on my Facebook feed, and there's a big story on CBN News. Then the other surreal thing happening is former President Trump's criminal trial. And the latest is it looks like he's going to have to miss his son Barron's high school graduation because the judge said that he's got to be in court every single day. He'll be treated like differently than no other defendant, and he must sit in the courtroom all day. And right now they're in the jury selection, the so-called voir dire, and that part of the trial, I don't know for sure that a defendant really needs to be there. It's usually like a lot of jury consultants and things like that that decide with the lawyers who they're going to pick to be on the jury. But they're trying to find, in New York, of all places, people that don't have an opinion one way or the other about Trump or about this case. And I honestly, I still don't understand. I can't really, no one has articulated what the crime is here to the extent that it makes any sense to me. So Trump was involved with Stormy Daniels some years ago. So she's this porn star, stripper personality. I'm sure everybody knows who she is. And then I guess the story is she threatened to go public, and then Trump paid her money to stay quiet. And apparently he's done this with other people as well. A lot of famous people do this. They have embarrassing things in their life, and they pay people to stay quiet, get them to sign, agreements, to not be able to disclose, so-called non-disclosure agreements. And this is not unusual. How this becomes a crime, I just don't understand. The only thing that I have heard is that somehow, by suppressing this story from coming out, that by paying Stormy Daniels this money, that was an illegal campaign contribution, that was somehow to benefit his campaign. And because of that, it was not registered properly as a campaign donation, contribution to his own campaign. That's the most I can tell you. And that doesn't even make sense to me. I'm struggling for words to try to explain it. But this is so hard for me to watch when you see what Hunter Biden and the whole Biden family has gotten away with. I mean, everything from the gun charges to the porn-filled laptop to the tax evasion to the deals with China to all of this stuff. And still, Hunter Biden is still walking around free and Trump is on trial. And it's just, for me, the biggest problem I have with this is the double standard. There is no doubt a double standard. Trump is being pursued with one level of vigor, and we're not seeing that happening with other people, especially the Bidens. And I don't even understand how there's a crime here with the whole Stormy Daniels thing. I mean, maybe technically somehow there is, but there's a crime with what Hunter Biden did in the tax evasion, the gun charges, all these other things. What we're supposed to, believe is on that laptop from hell that was released. I mean, there seems like a ton of stuff there to be prosecuted for. And as we've said on this show many times before, I'm not going to go into even what kind of pornography was supposedly on that laptop. But it sounds like it was pornography that went beyond the line of what would even be legal. Obviously, no mention even here of morals or ethics or any of that. But when you just look at the Bidens and you look at Trump, it just seems so hard to believe that Trump is on this fast track to be prosecuted for something like this, for the Stormy Daniels thing. And I'm not defending that. And, Trump has a past that's, colored. He's definitely, had a lot of women in his life. He's been married, three times? But I believe Trump is a changed man. I've told people this many times before that, God uses flawed people. Look at King David. I mean, we can look at the Apostle Paul. We can make a list of all these flawed people that God has used. Look at me. So I think we've got to be careful when we, look at Trump's past and we look at it in terms of, I know a lot of Christians, probably leaders, are going to come out like they did last cycle and say, can't vote for Trump. Look at him. He's been married three times. He's got, Stormy Daniels and these other things in his past. But when you look at his policies, his policies line up with my values, with my Christian values. And I believe Trump is a changed man. I believe he's a Christian. And yes, he does have a past. I just don't see what the crime is here. I just don't see it. Okay, so this is kind of a weird thing that happened. I have a client that I'm working with, and they're having difficulty getting through underwriting on a mortgage because of some open disputes that they have on their credit report. So as you know, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, you have the right to challenge anything on your credit report that is inaccurate, even if it's partially inaccurate. So sometimes during that dispute process, a dispute can just be considered an open dispute. So the creditor has so many days to respond, and then you have so many days to reply back, and kind of goes back and forth like a he said, she said, and it kind of goes on, and it could go on for months. Well, having open disputes on your credit report that aren't resolved one way or the other can actually be a red flag when applying for a mortgage. So the takeaway from this is just to let people know, if you have something negative on your credit, obviously you have a right to dispute that. But as far as timing goes, you probably want to deal with those things a few months before you actually apply for a mortgage. Or it might be better off, I know this sounds counterintuitive, but it might be better off to actually not dispute it and just go through underwriting with that ding on your credit. And if it comes up, you know, you can explain it and give your side of the story. But having an open dispute, that is, you filed the dispute, the creditor has challenged back that no, they think what they have is correct, and it's sort of unresolved. So it's kind of in that middle step of being resolved one way or the other. Having that open dispute, as it's called, could be a red flag in getting a mortgage. So just something to be aware of. And, you know, that's why it's good to have credit monitoring. It's good to take a look at your credit report, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a year, and even more frequently, you know, through, you know, sites like Credit Karma, Credit Sesame, where you can get in there and look at it for free just to see what's going on, especially if you have plans to apply for something big, you know, like a mortgage in the coming months. Okay, I want to throw this out and ask people to email me, jamesalperis@gmail.com, jamesalperis@gmail.com. Email me if you would be interested in a legit credit repair service. I'm right now in the process, and I may have mentioned this on the last episode. I'm in the process of, I've got a few different companies in touch with me wanting me to like co-sponsor a service where I could legitimately recommend them to help you to fix your credit. Now, you can do a lot of this on your own, but there are companies that will do it for you, and they know a lot about exactly how to dispute things and what your rights are and how to write the perfect letter to dispute things, all those kind of details. If you're interested in something like that, I just want to hear from you. Just drop me an email and let me know, and we're going to continue to move forward and looking at that as a possibility. Okay, home equity lines of credit. So interest rates are going up, and you know, I mentioned that today on Facebook to let, you know, let people know, you know, rates are going up, and you know, it's something that we have been concerned about. You know, are we going to turn the corner, and is the Fed going to drop, you know, rates? We were told just 3-4 weeks ago that the Fed would likely cut rates 3 times this year, and that inflation had died down, but that's no longer the case. Inflation is rearing its ugly head. We're now hearing, you know, talk of no rate cuts this year. Now we're hearing talk of maybe a rate increase. I don't think we're going to see an increase, but we might not get these cuts. And so what we're seeing is mortgage rates are going up. And I want to just remind people that we do have available in my mortgage practice, I do have available these fixed rate second mortgages, home equity lines of credit. They're fixed rate. You can get approved in 5 minutes. You can close in 5 days. There is no appraisal required. And this works on your primary residence, your secondary residence, or even on investment properties. If you'd like to find out more about it, check out my website, which is quickturnheloc.com. And HELOC is H-E-L-O-C. So just go there directly. You can apply in 5 minutes and get an answer. Close in 5 days. quickturnheloc.com. And HELOC, again, is H-E-L-O-C. quickturnheloc.com. The Bitcoin halving. What are we talking about here? Halving as an H-A-L-V-I-N-G. So about every 4 years, the difficulty level of so-called Bitcoin mining increases. And that's going to happen here, they say, in the next 3 days, probably around April 19th or the 20th. The mining reward will be cut in half, which means it'll take more electricity, more computer and processing power to get Bitcoin using the mining process. Now, what this historically has meant is that it's a sign that the supply of Bitcoin, that the increasing number of Bitcoin is slowly coming to a halt, and that the maximum number of Bitcoin will soon be in circulation. So just basic economics, supply and demand. It's going to be much harder for Bitcoin miners to get Bitcoin. So the increase in Bitcoin in circulation is shrinking. It's shrinking to the maximum of 21 million coins that could ever be created. So about 80-90% of the Bitcoin investors out there, the investor community, is telling people that this is very bullish, that we're going to see much higher Bitcoin prices because of this so-called Bitcoin halving. Now, there's a small percentage, 10-20%, that are saying, no, this is not good. A lot of people are going to leave mining, and this is going to be a problem for the Bitcoin network. As a result, Bitcoin's going to crash. There's always this percentage of people out there on Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin analysis, that are predicting a crash. I saw one article that said Bitcoin's going to drop to be worth just a few $100. There's always people making these kind of predictions because they get a lot of attention. You know, if you just say, oh, you know, Bitcoin's going to go up 10% this year, nobody's going to pay attention to that. But if you say Bitcoin's going to a million, or you say it's going to a dollar, that's when people are going to pay attention to you. So a lot of these predictions are hyperbole because that's what gets headlines. That's what gets clicks. So that's a big thing happening in the next 3 or 4 days. I personally think this means higher prices, not just for Bitcoin, but for all of cryptocurrency. Migrants flood New York City Hall in protest of losing luxury hotel rooms. This is insane. So what New York City has been doing is they're actually housing illegal immigrants in luxury hotels. If you've ever stayed in New York City in a hotel, I mean, we're talking bottom of the barrel hotel, $300 a night. Some of these hotel rooms at these luxury hotels are close to $1,000 a night. So somehow the city decided that they're going to use these luxury hotel rooms to house these migrants. And now, because they've run out of money, their ability to do it, and probably the truth is, just like they found in San Francisco, is probably these hotels are getting trashed. And it's just, again, it highlights the problem of this unregulated immigration system that we have. And I want to make my position clear, because I, you know, as a Christian, I have mercy on people who are in other countries where their lifestyle is very difficult, where they struggle from day to day. And I think we should have a system, and our system is broken. We need to have a system where people can apply and be able to legally come into this country. And people that, you know, are able to prove they have a clear criminal background, people that are able to prove that they have some kind of skill to bring into our economy, they have some way to provide for themselves. And it needs to be limited, because there can't be an unlimited number of immigrants that come in. We've got to have a limit, because just like with any, you know, any family budget, you can give a certain percentage to charity, but you can't give everything. And there's only so much you can give. There's only so much you can do for people. And so I think we need, obviously, some reform here. And it's not me being, you know, merciless on these people. I feel bad for them. But at the same time, I think a lot of this is because these cities have promoted that, come to our city, we're a sanctuary, we have all these services for you. And now they can't deliver, because they've basically created you know, a magnet. These people are coming in such large numbers now that they can't provide for them. So to me, you know, what's more cruel? Is it, you know, blocking them from coming in or lying to them, telling them, hey, come to our city. We have all these services for you. We'll take care of you. And then not doing that, not being able to do that, seems to me to be more cruel than keeping them out to begin with. NASA takes responsibility for a mysterious object that crashed through the house of a roof in Florida. Now, this was in South Florida, in Naples, I believe. Someone in their home had like a cylindrical object. I think it was about described as maybe the size of a football that literally came down from space and went through their roof, crashed completely through their roof, completely through their kitchen ceiling, and was just sitting there on the floor in their home. Could have killed someone, the force that it came down. And it turns out that it's some kind of a part from the space station. And NASA said, whoops, we thought that would burn up on reentry, which of course is what happens with a lot of space junk. But that didn't happen in this case. And it makes you wonder, like, huh, there's a lot of stuff up there floating around in space. And I guess maybe it's the odds of winning the lottery that you could get hit by a piece of that returning to Earth. But you wonder, is there some better way for them to deal with this so-called space junk than just assuming it's going to burn up in the Earth's atmosphere or that it's going to fall into the ocean? I mean, the ocean is like 70% of the Earth is water, so that you've got the odds in your favor that it's going to go into the ocean. But here you go, Naples, Florida, crashes through somebody's kitchen ceiling. So just interesting as we have more and more in space, all these Starlink satellites, all these things happening in space. And by the way, this battle, which took place over the weekend between Israel and Iran, is the first battle that occurred in space in world history, because a lot of those missiles that were launched by Iran were actually blown up and intercepted while they were in outer space. So that really is interesting to consider that as well. And then we'll close it out with this. I had a great day yesterday. I went up to St. Augustine, and this was super fun because I ran into somebody that had the cutest little pet pig, and this pet pig was named Arnold. And there's a nice video on my Facebook page of this. Really, really funny, you know, little pig. And so sweet and knew its name and was giving a lady kisses that came up and was petting it. I don't know. I don't kiss pigs. So that was just me. But in any case, fantastic day yesterday up in St. Augustine. Thanks so much for joining us. Love being back doing the broadcast. Always interested in hearing from you. Drop me an email. JamesLParis@gmail.com. Thanks so much for joining us. So long, everybody.